You are listening to the Alpha Male Buddhist from Brooklyn podcast. Expand your mind and keep it love.
This is episode 150, and I'm your host, Miguel. So, hope all you guys are doing good over there in podcast land. I hope everybody's safe and sound, and you're able to navigate your way through these hazardous and challenging times that we're facing, you know? I know some people kind of make light of it, or they talk about it like it's, you know, cold soup being brought to the table, served to them. You know, that it bothers them that much, and other people, their lives are really being destroyed. So it's a thing that we all have to have compassion and kind of slow things down a little bit and look around to see the loved ones that we have. And even if we don't, we may not even know there's people that need help. It's funny, I watch obscure YouTube channels, and one of the channels that I watch was a guy in L.A., this young guy, Milk74, as he pronounces it, Milk74. Cool dude, you know, he puts out some young guy shit, you know, a lot of testosterone and a lot of snot and balled up fist type shit, but the guy, I listen to him, you know, because you need to, there's different voices out there that you need to listen to. So, but go on YouTube and check out his channel. It's Milk74. So, I was watching it last night, and he usually has, you know, he's going after these different people on YouTube and all of this political shit to get viewers and everything like that. He's doing his thing. Everybody, YouTube is like the new currency. So, he's doing his thing on there. I find him to be entertaining. He pops shit. He knows how to pop shit. So, I'm watching it, and he has a little, like, two-minute clip on there. What it is, basically, he walks up to a bum. I don't want to call him a bum. He's an underprivileged man, a man that's on hard times, an older guy, an older white dude, it looked like. He was really dirty. And Milk went up to him and says, "Yo, I told you I'd be back." And he gave him, like, some soup that his woman had made for him, you know, for the homeless man, and the soda and some other stuff. So he walked up and gave it to him. The guy just looked up for a split second. And that one split second of a look that man gave up to the young man, Milk74, the look that the homeless man gave him spoke a million words. You know, it broke my heart. I put a comment on it. If you go check out the YouTube, I put something like, I didn't cry, but my lower lip trembled, you know. But it was really touching. And I think he came back a little later on and gave him some cheeseburgers and shit, which the man, you know, immediately appreciated. So it's touching to see the times that we're in and the steps that people do and what they take. And when you stop to think for somebody else. So, that being said, I hope you're all doing good. And, yeah, early yesterday, which was Saturday morning. Today is June 28th, 2020, so Sunday. So, yesterday, Saturday, I woke up around 10:30. And I says, you know what, I want to go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, New York. Hop on the train and go down. Trains are running, everything, the city's, quote-unquote, open. So I proceed to, you know, get prepared, and literally on the way out the door, I says, you know what, I don't want to see the Metropolitan Museum. I just want to check out my old running grounds, you know, Union Square, Washington Square Park, 23rd Street Park over there by the Flatiron Building. You know, that kind of like in between Midtown and the Village, like that section right there is really cool. A lot of activities, and it's just really beautiful architecture. I appreciate, it's funny, you know, I grew up in New York, but I appreciate it as if I was a tourist. I don't know if that makes sense, but just the architecture, the people, the culture, the speed of what New York moves at, you know, they talk about a New York minute. You know, those of you who knows what that is, that means like a lot of shit could happen in a minute. You know, that's New York, and I love it, man. You know, it keeps your adrenaline running, and it keeps you alive. You know, it's funny, when I go to the city, and I'm going to get into my walk yesterday in New York. But when I walk into the city, I immediately feel like I've been plugged into a 220-volt outlet and I'm ready. You know, I get energy literally from the city. And that energy I carry for me for a couple of days. It's like a good feeling. So yesterday I was deciding to go to the museum. I didn't. I just went down to what the 23rd Street Flatiron Building, Union Square Park. I walked all the way down to Chinatown on Canal Street and Mott. Went up and down. I bought some cheap headbuds, these fake iPod things. They're like $15. Battery doesn't last, but they look cool. So, yeah, I did a long walk yesterday. Got off the train. I started walking downtown. I immediately noticed that the city was empty. there wasn't that many people. Even in my car, there was like one weird dude, which you always gonna get in New York. Weird old dude that was like lurking and shit, you know, like he was like 70 and shit, but only in New York. And like two other people, it was pretty empty. So when I got off on 7th Avenue there, right on 34th Street, Penn Station, noticed it was pretty empty. So the day was nice. It was off and on raining, some periods of thunder showers. But I like the rain. I have no issues with the rain. We need it. So as I'm walking, and I know that sounds crazy, oh, you like the rain, but the rain is beautiful. So I'm walking. And as, you know, there are a couple of crazies out there, man. It's funny, but I saw some sketchy-looking dudes out there walking around, man. Like, it was groups of twos. You know, like, two guys walking around. I don't want to get too graphic or too detailed, but just things. And I'm a city boy, man. I'm born and bred in Brooklyn, so I know the pulse, man. I know what's going on. And some of these guys, they were not up to any good. They were either lookouts, or I don't know, just a vibe that I had. And I'm just going to say it, like the white people, like they were not making eye contact, they were looking on the ground. I generally make eye contact with most people, even if it's just a quick, you know, human-to-human acknowledgement or something like that. Because that's the most dehumanizing thing, too, is when a person deals with you and they don't even make eye contact. Or it's weird, you know. Not that you're supposed to be, like, all focused with people, you know, everyone on the street, but, you know, just in general, you know, you have to keep that in mind. So, again, as I proceeded to walk downtown from Penn Station, everything looked pretty, you know, pretty cool and normal, except for it was pretty empty, considering for New York City. It's always crowded. Rain, snow, shine, whatever. It's late night, early morning, whatever. It's always a lot of people, you know. Especially on a nice day, which yesterday was. So, as I start going down, everything looks fine, but as I get into, like, FIT, like Fashion Institute of Technology right there, around 28th Street and down, you know, into like 21st Street, 19th Street, started noticing some graffiti on the wall. It's okay, graffiti, and a lot of sketchy people. So there was one particular area I got to, I believe it's Spring Street and Broadway. There was what they call a piece. And what a piece is, for those of you who are familiar with graffiti, is artistic expression. It's graffiti art. But it's like over several panels or a whole train car or a whole big wall, like a big piece, like a statement. When you got people looking out for you and shaking cans and passing them to you, like really with the gusto, getting a piece up. I can never write like that. But so I came upon this piece right on Spring Street that just kind of blew me away. And I'm kind of looking at the pictures. Now, I'm going to put it up on Instagram. Those of you who have never checked on my Instagram, it's Alpha Male Buddhist, you know, at Instagram. You'll find me. I actually have, I believe, two accounts on there. One is Alpha Male Buddhist and one is Alpha Male. One I don't do shit on. You know, I have a couple of pictures on. And another one I'm a little bit more active. I'm not very active on Instagram. So, came upon this piece and I said, you know what, I'll get some pictures of it on my way back up because I intended on going down to Chinatown to see what was going on down there. Canal Street, Mott. So, I'm walking down and I'm seeing, you know, just some interesting situations. Yeah, man, like I said, the some people, they were not making eye contact. They were looking down, looking away and stuff like that. Some, not all. But a weird, weird vibe in the air, you know, which I rare to find in New York City. You know, you could be having the worst day or there could be the worst shit going on, but you're going to Midtown and everything is bubbling and, you know, activity, man, you know, good energy. It's great. But yesterday was very weird. So, you know, It's hard to put into words, man, but a few things really struck me at my core looking at the situation, knowing that I came from there. I'm originally born in downtown Brooklyn, down by the Barclay Center right now, by that big clock building. So, downtown. But I used to spend most of my time, a good amount of my time also, in Manhattan. So, I know Manhattan so well. I was a bike messenger when I was a young man from ages, I think, 22 and 23, something like that. Did it for like 2 years. I was what they call a pro. I was I worked with the same dispatcher as the van guy. So in other words, I was like a van, but I was on a bike, a fixed bike, for those of you who know what fixes are. That little single, no derailleur, just a single gear in the back cog. But I made money doing it, man, and I learned a lot. I saw a lot of things. You know, life moves really fast when you do that type of work. So I know the city very well, what I'm talking about, the feeling and everything that's going on. So what I want to get into is this, man. It's like people need to find a way to find a vehicle to get where they want to go, whatever that vehicle might be. Everybody's going to have a different vehicle, a different way of expressing something unique about them that they do, you know, some either skill or whatever it is that they have, you know. God blesses everybody with different gifts. Your responsibility is to take the most advantage of those gifts that God bestows on you. You know what? You know how to talk? Become a salesman, man. If you know math, you know, learn code, whatever. But take advantage of all that stuff. But what I want to get at is this. I remember living, I'll say the street. It was Wyckoff Street, W-Y-C-K-O-F-F, Wyckoff Street, and Nevins, right in downtown Brooklyn. And that's where I grew up. Prior to that, I lived on Smith Street in Wyckoff, 38 Wyckoff, which was a nicer area, but we ended up leaving that around 1969. So I remember the one memory that I have is wanting to get out of there. I mean, I enjoyed living there and everything like that, but it was the hood, man. You know, like I would hear junkies on the roof and see a lot of things I wish I didn't see, you know? And have a lot of experiences that were not good, you know? So my driving force was to improve myself and get out of there. But the thing I didn't do, I didn't wait for somebody to help me or reach out a hand. Although many promised, and a lot of people like, oh, yeah, we have this program or, you know, whatever, just talking that bullshit. And I said to myself, I'm going to have to really double down and do what I need to do to get out of here and get some discipline in my life and find focus in an area that I can make money and make a living and empower myself. Many problems arise when you don't find that drive within yourself and it's predicated upon something external. And I see a lot of that happening right now. I'm going to speak my shit. Like when you see kids, and it's black kids, white kids, Spanish kids, it's everybody that's doing it. But when they do that, man, let's say they bust down the glass, they get in the store, they steal everything. That's bad enough, man. That's bad. But then they set it on fire, you know. So there's something behind it. There's an agenda because even yesterday, man, like some of these people, when you look at them, it looked like they were at work, the way they were conducting themselves. It looked like they were at work. Sketchy, man. So we as a people, man, need to find a way to empower ourselves in a way that's going to make a difference in our lifetime to us. And not just think of us now, today, but think of the young ones. That little kid with the snot nose running around that's 4 years old that don't know where his daddy is and is hungry. You know, is he gonna have hopium for breakfast or, you know, promises? You need to feed that young man, you know? So that's the approach that I'm taking it because this is holistic, man. And what's happening is this division and this coronavirus is put in place to divide us. That's why they want us 6 feet apart, mouth covered. I said it when it first came out. I was playing that Rasta music, that Jamaican dancehall music. I called The Cure to Coronavirus, I don't know, 6 episodes back. With Tony, I forget his name, he's sitting fat, and Shabba Ranks. Anyway, the last thing in life you want to be is predictable. And what I mean by that is you never want to be in a position where if somebody comes up and presses your buttons, hypothetically, in the right sequence, they're going to have an expected reaction from you of what they expected. In other words, they control you. And that's what's happening to our community right now. Like, instead of us binding down and trying to figure out the best way to push our kids up because of a food situation or living situation or studying or just role model, helping with homework, whatever. Now, I haven't been a dad. My son's 31 years old. God bless him, and he's doing all right, so you have to have something that I have been recently been... word I've been using a lot is situational awareness. And it holds true for collapse scenarios and just different things in life. But situational awareness, you know, I really felt it yesterday when I was walking down Broadway, especially right around 18th Street and, you know, Canal. This is weird, you know, situationally. So you want to be in a position where you're able to develop that and ask yourself, let's say hypothetically you walk into a field and there's two paths, and the path on the left, you know, it's just more road going ahead, and you can see it just going in the distance. And in the path on the right, it's like, you know, a big steak sandwich with, you know, a 32-ounce soda with ice, crushed ice, and the whole, you know, just sitting there with the light proportion on it, with the napkins, you know, the whole night. You got to ask yourself, is this a trap, right? Like, this is too easy. Why is that there for me like that? Why? How am I going to get something for nothing, right? So be aware of the control that outside has of you. Your main objective, whatever else you're doing in life, your main objective is to improve your lot. Not necessarily to have a big car and travel the world, anything like that, but your objective is to do better so that your kin can move ahead, whether it's your own children, your family, or just yourself, to push up and to better your circumstance. Live in a nicer place that's safer. And if anybody says anything else to you, then they're bullshitting. Lately, I've been hearing a lot of clamoring of all sides, you know, people just making all these wild accusations and everything like that. But you've got to apply logic to a situation and say to yourself, you know, if my people are viewed in a certain way, if my people are viewed, they can say whatever they want. Like I've heard it say, they walk afuera from their mouth out, just saying words out without it coming from the heart. But you know, if you look at my people, let's say you look at my people, Puerto Rican people, and like, oh, you know, you can't, you know, you know, they smile in your face, but when they see all this death and destruction and everything that's happening in our community, of course they're going to mumble to one another and talk about it, because you know what I do too. This is bullshit. You know, if I'm not mistaken, last month or 3 weeks ago, 27 murders in Chicago by gunfire, black on black crime, but nobody wants to talk about that, all right? We got to straighten out our own community. Don't let the music get to your head, kid. You know, you're letting the music get to you. You're fucking sniffing your own farts, as it were. And the problem when you do that is you're out of touch with reality and what's really happening. Okay? The important thing in life is the result that you get. Right? The result that you get. And I don't know who this is attributed to, but my nephew corrected me on this. He's in LA. But I gave him the saying, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome. And that's what's happening with our people. You know, what we seem to be doing. And when I say we, I'm not out there hurting people or doing anything like that. I'm speaking from the heart, man. But I see it happening and I hear it. I feel it. And it is what it is, man. You know, and you see, okay, back to the root word is the result that you get. Our people are going down. Yes, some people are making it. They're getting good jobs, educations, and making it out of the hood, which I love it. But the community as a whole, I remember coming up in, like, the worst communities, like in the bad communities. And I look at them now, like in Baltimore and D.C. and New York City and L.A. and Chicago and St. Louis. And I can go on and on. But there's some pretty horrifying places, man. The lives that they have to drink this water full of lead and everything that they live. But you know what? No, there's not a program that's going to help you. There's no program that's going to help you. What they want to do is they want to wipe out our community. Get that through your head first. That's why you got to take care of your mom and your dad or your brother and whoever lays ahead next to you, and be aware of situational awareness of what's going on. I'm not kidding. I could be speaking a lot more stuff, but I'm just going to bite my tongue because I kind of am aware. I spend a lot of time on YouTube and what's that other one? BitChute and stuff like that. I watch a lot of different videos on all the, you know, this pedophilia bullshit and everything like that. And just all governmental stuff and what's happening and their intentions for us with vaccines and bloody, 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 right? But that's not going to help me. I do want to be aware of what's happening, but I know that there's plans for us, because when I saw those flames going up in the right and the looks that, you know, I would see people give one another, the looks that I would get sometimes, like people would look at me like I'm a threat and stuff like that, and I'm the furthest thing from that, unless if you fuck with me. But craziness, man, right now. And no one knows which way to look. That's why you got to get centered within yourself and find out the steps immediately that you need to take. And another thing, don't kill yourself, because I myself, I've been just working on all kind of shit, and it kind of has a tendency of wearing you down too. And the last time I did that, I got sick. You know, your immune goes down and you get sick. So as a people, man, we need to be aware that there's a reason for all of these different things happening, and it's not a coincidence that the words that we're being given really have no delivery other than just words. As I said, boca fuera, boca being mouth, fuera, out, outside, boca fuera. These are just empty, hollow words that they're saying to us. So Black Lives Matter and all, and they're agreeing, rah, rah, and everything like that. And another thing, I'm just going to say, because I saw this shit and it really pissed me off, man. I saw a protest going on outside, and it was just all people going their own directions. And there was this one white kid, he's like 20 years old, young kid. And he's standing there doing whatever, either helping somebody or doing something. And this other kid, black kid, comes and just clocks him and knocks him out, like for no reason. Now, this kid is here trying to help the community and kind of represent what's going on as far as him supporting your situation and supporting everything that's going on and make it safer, because, you know what I mean? It's just, it balances out the whole crowd there. So, because, you know, we get mistreated all the time, but don't ever do it. That's some ridiculous shit, man. You know, if you can't help somebody up, don't touch them. What is this just hitting people and these knockout game things at people? What retardedness is that? Trust me, man. There was a guy that went through the NDE, a near-death experience. Just hear this one out. Hear this one out. That's how come these elites don't want to die. I think Rockefeller had 3 or 4 heart changes, and they're talking about cybernetics and transhumanism and shit like that, because they do not want to die because they don't want to face their maker. But there was a YouTube thing that I watched. I think I spoke about it a couple of episodes back, where they had these people had NDEs, and they interviewed him. And the one guy, he was a bully, and he would strong-arm people and beat people up, and just he was just a low-life person, man. And this guy caused a lot of harm to people and everything like that. And basically, he used to beat people up all the time is what he did. And something happened, and he passed away. I think he was in a car accident or something like that. And he said when he passed away, it was an indefinite, there was no sense of time, but he said every literal strike that he had hit somebody with, he felt it on the receiving end. Like all the karma that he put out, he felt it back within himself. And that's like the way the laws. There's crazy stuff on MDs, man. There's people that they die, they flatline on that monitor, and they go above the room, and they could tell you what time it is, who walked in the room, what color shirt they had on, and what transpired. Where did that come from, right? That means that we're more than this meat wagon that you're looking at walking around. So what's my point? My point is this. We as a community got to get it together. You know, and I don't want to be one of the people. Half my friends were black right now, but when I grew up, really, I was in Manhattan. And if I was around in my area, home area, I was playing ball, playing basketball all the time. All the time. So you know all my friends were black growing up. More than half. And I don't want to be one of them, but I Puerto Rican, that it just rolls like that. We don't think of it. It's funny, but when we roll together and shit, we don't really think of it in them terms. Unless if you're an idiot or you put it in that light. But there's no separation there, you know. But our people are being controlled, and we need to find a way to get out of that. Because you see everybody else's community come in here. And I'll say the Koreans. And I'll tell you, the Indians, man, they're fucking bankrolling everybody, man. Look at them. What they're doing in my area, they'll buy a little bungalow house, knock it over, and put up a little palace and shit down the block from me. Like, there was one street a block from me that has 2 of them on there. They bulldoze these 2 houses, and they put up these McMansions and shit. You know, and they're not bothering anybody. You know, they don't really bother me. But why can't our people do that? Why is it that we got to settle for the chicken bones and shit? Forever in history. People talk about history and how come we ain't improving shit and making it better? Some of us do. But let's band together, man, where we build. And that's why they put us against one another. So we have all this violence and we just go after one another in a way that prohibits our growth and expansion and development as individuals, as a people. But they want to relegate us to the breadlines, man, and they want to get rid of us in these FEMA camps and shit with these plastic coffins that they got made up. Just YouTube FEMA coffins, and they're made out of this, like, liner shit that's like 12-gauge plastic that's used to mix concrete and shit. You know, them little tubs? And they're shaped like graves, and I think you could stack three bodies on it. They're, like, kind of high up. But that's basically what they have in store for us. So why is it, as a people, we can't break that cycle of poverty, of oppression, of depression? Why can't we break that cycle and just get out of that? That's what we called it when I was growing up, is break the cycle. And that's something that you need to think about, because everything is not in the exact... Yes, Buddhism, it's in the moment, being mindful in the moment and all that stuff like that, but that's separate discussion for a separate day. That's spirituality, that's positive, and that's within oneself. I'm talking geopolitical, what's happening right now today. We're being played. We're being zooked out, you know, like we're stupid and shit. They're taking our lunch and laughing at us, and we're, like, laughing back with them, you know? Because it's of the moment, you know, you get a little piece of cheese, and, you know, like, they send you this little bonus, $1,200 a week, and, you know, you become a little lamb, and you roll over and shit. Yeah, you can accumulate and take the steps that you have to do, but do it with the mindset of you employing a strategy to get you to leverage that patience and that passivity to move explosively in the direction you want to go, to as far as improving and bettering yourself. There's always a time to move and do things, and there's a time to sit back and watch. And it's a delicate balance between the two, when to do which. So, yeah, there's a lot of... I'm coming at you from a lot of different angles, but there's a lot going on right now, so there's not one lens that's going to kind of shed light on the whole issue for you. You have to employ some Taoism, some Buddhism, some street knowledge, some Hermeticism and shit, some Catholicism, not Catholicism, but some Christ thinking from the Bible. It's not easy. It's really not easy. I know we're in the end times of Revelation. If you go through the book of Daniel and the book of Revelation, they decode all of the stuff that's going on. But that's real tough stuff. It's in there. Like, the meat and bones of it is in there in the book of Revelations and the book of Daniel, the New Testament. It is what it is. So, well, I was just in the fan for a second. It messed me up. So, how about that? So, I could see the lines up here on my Audacity. I see the lines from the fan. It's cool. So, yeah. We as a people have to be aware of what's being perpetrated upon us as a community, as a people. When I say we, I mean underprivileged people. Before, they used to be Spanish and black, or Puerto Ricans and black back in the 60s. Dominicans, but Cubans. Now it's white folk that are poor, like dirt shit poor, you know, and all types, you know. So we have to be mindful of that and find a way in us to move in that direction. Yeah, you're going to be faced with adversity and challenges and things like that are uphill for you, that things are very difficult for you. But what happens is you have to become accustomed to hard work. Learn to fall in love with things that are hard to work on, things that are hard to do, tasks, responsibilities, deadlines that you have to do. Learn to love that and be at one with that, because that's where growth comes from, you know, from pressure. If you take, you know, a lump of coal and you subject it to enough time, pressure, and heat, you get a diamond. And that's alchemy right there, you know? So you have to find it within yourself as far as the resources that you have available to you, to just be mindful that this is not frivolous, just to be, you know, you're going to have a couple of days where you don't really care, or you're happy-go-lucky or whatever, but you got to bear down, man. If you find yourself where you never sit down and bear down as far as the direction that you're going in or what you're doing, you got issues, man, because you have nothing cooking, you know. If you're not paying bills, if you're not in the mix, you know what I'm saying, if you're not doing stuff and getting it done, then you have to think to yourself, why? You know, what steps is it that you can take to change that, you know? So, another thing too, man, is like, I have never understood, like, a person that wants to be like everybody else, wear the same exact shoes, wear the same exact sneakers, have the same exact attitude, listen to the same exact music. So, a cookie cutter, and that's what's happening right now. If you took a white kid when I was young, a white kid that was 22 years old, and a white kid today, and a black kid and Spanish kid, whatever, the Spanish kid would be listening to his own type of music. The white kid would have, like, you know, Ozzy Osbourne and shit. And the black dude would have, like, not Run DMC, but maybe, let's see, who's this, whatever his name is. But you'll have, like, some, what's his name? Because I listened to him from the Bronx, Boogie Down Production, BDP. If you listen to Boogie Down Production, that's some old stuff. But that's what we had back then. Now everything is homogenized into one gelatinous mass where everything is the same. They listen to the same music, they have the same attitude, the same comments, the same smartphone existence that they lead, you know, and that they're happy with that because they know no better. So I don't want to make this a lecture or a sermon, but it's something to be mindful of, because we have to be aware of what's transpiring as to us individually and as a community. And both are really important. Number one, most important, is to us individually, because if we don't improve the self individually, how are we going to help the community? So let's get our ship right and let's move in the right direction. Yeah, we have feet of clay. Maybe you went out riding and you were breaking shit and you feel guilty and shit like that. Don't do it again. And then that karma's out of your life, man, you know? You don't have to deal with it anymore. Turn your direction. I feel that God, when he sees a bad person turn away from bad towards the good, I mean, I think that's like you get double extra credit for that. I don't know. I'm just guessing. But it has to be something that's great, because you're turning somebody's life around, you know, from darkness to light. That's pretty much what I have for you. I've gone over a little 30 minutes now, and I just wanted to encapsulate my ideas of what's going on right now. So let's think towards the future. Let's think for the young ones, the direction that they need to go in. It's not that, wipe that snot off their nose and give them a fresh Kleenex and a little book to read so they can improve their minds and learn. You know, this way we can be competitive with all the other communities out there, and that's what it's about. We call that, in Spanish, that's seguir la raza, you know, to push forward, you know, your culture and your people, and that's what we have to do, you know. So I'm going to leave it out right there. I have that beautiful piece from Spring Street in Broadway, New York City, from this week and from yesterday. And I'm kind of deciphering it. I'm reading it. It's freaking so New York, man. So if you guys never have seen interesting graffiti like that or whatever, or if you're interested in it, check out my Instagram, which is Alpha Male Buddhist, and I'm going to put it up there. It's going to be the one picture with the 10 attached pictures. I'm just trying to figure out how to do that. There's a trick to that so that I don't, you know, you can't post too much because they shadow ban you and all that shit. That about wraps it up for this first segment. Right now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to play like a 25-minute, 26-minute clip of a KGB agent by the name of Yuri Bezmenov. He defected here, I think, in the early or mid-80s. I forget the exact date. But this Yuri Bezmenov, if pay very close attention. I know he's got an accent, but pay very close attention of what he's saying, because when he opens up, it seems a little boring, but if you're paying attention, what he's saying is that they wanted to get it to the point where society, to the point where if somebody misspoke or said something wrong, they would immediately get reported, and how you had to be very careful of what you said and the politics that were coming into play, because they wanted to implement speech control, which is happening to us right now. They call it hate speech, but it's really speech control. You should have the ability and the freedom of speech to say whatever you want. I think in Canada right now, Jordan Peterson, they were going to put him in jail for not using the appropriate pronoun, gender pronoun or whatever, which is fucking ridiculous that you're going to go to jail for speech. So this Yuri Bezmenov, he breaks it all down and he gets into like the different aspects of the first phase is the educational phase where you have to indoctrinate. It takes 20 years because that child reaches first grade by 5 years old, and by the time his educational process of whatever it is, 12 years, and that's the indoctrination. And next is the demoralization. Once you've indoctrinated the educational system, this all comes from the Frankfurt School in Germany, the early 20s, and they migrated over to Princeton University. But once you get to that phase where you indoctrinate people, then you demoralize them, and that's what you're seeing right now. That's what you started seeing in the mid-80s, the demoralization process where everything became hypersexualized and degrading, you know, where it's obvious what it is with all being, you know, even with this, what do they call that, Snapchat and all that stuff, where you could put these little whiskers on and stuff like that. People say, you're exaggerating. No, but we're being animalized, like little kids for Christmas, you know, instead of being a Superman or something like that, they put like a little rabbit thing on or something like an animal. which makes no sense. This Yuri Bezmenov breaks it down. Everything that's going on right now. So if you pay very close attention to what he's saying, now, myself, I could see it from the implementation process with the education, because I could kind of remember this coming into the school system in the 70s. I kind of, you know, kind of recall what he's talking about. And this leads up to the society that we have today. And we're way past the demoralization. Now we're into where they want to take total control of us, force vaccinations, where they dictate to us what we do to our own bodies. You know, they close all the stores down, put all the middle class out of business, just shatter lives. But you can get an abortion, and you can, you know, you can buy liquor and cigarettes and everything else, but, you know, and you can get an abortion, but you can't go to church. So you have to think, you know, this guy is really speaking some truth. So I'm going to put Yuri Bezmenov on. This is a clip off of YouTube. I did covered him in last year, I think, in one of my podcasts. But this is a classic. I mean, everybody has people that know this stuff, they've listened to this and dissected it. It's very dense. This is very rich, and you want to listen to this guy. And I would recommend listening to it a couple of times, because his accent is kind of thick. He's understandable, but there's a lot there. So I'm going to play this clip, this 26-minute clip of Yuri Bezmenov, the KGB agent, Soviet KGB agent, who's breaking down what has taken place from the beginning, how this whole country has been subverted, and they want to turn it into a communist socialist country. And you know what happens then? We all get wiped out. Look at what the monster that Lenin was, and Stalin. Stalin was a maniac. I mean, he killed, God, the estimates of the Soviets from that point, 1917... I don't know, it could be 60 million people, and then put another 40 million from China. It's over 100 million people that communism has killed. And look what's happening in China with this, tracking everything and social credit score. It's bullshit. Pay close attention. I want to thank you for listening, and namaste.
Representatives of business circles. Most of these people were divided roughly into groups. Those who would toe the Soviet foreign policy, they would be promoted to the positions of power through media and public opinion manipulation. Those who refused the Soviet influence in their own country would be character assassinated or executed physically, come revolution. Same way as in the small town of Hue in South Vietnam, several thousands of Vietnamese were executed in one night when the city was captured by Viet Cong for only 2 days. An American CIA could never figure out how could possibly communists know each individual, where he lives, where to get him, and would be arrested in one night, basically in some 4 hours before dawn, put on a van, taken out of the city limits, and shot. The answer is very simple. Long before communists occupied the city, there was extensive network of informers, local Vietnamese citizens, who knew absolutely everything about people who are instrumental in public opinion, including barbers and taxi drivers. Everyone who was sympathetic to the United States was executed. Same thing was done under the guidance of the Soviet embassy in Hanoi, and same thing I was doing in New Delhi. To my horror, I discovered that in the files where people were doomed to execution, there were names of pro-Soviet journalists with whom I was personally friendly.
Pro-Soviet?
Yes. They were idealistically minded leftists who made several visits to USSR. And yet, the KGB decided that come revolution or drastic changes in political structure of India, they will have to go.
Why is that?
Because they know too much. Mm-hmm. Simply because, you see, the useful idiots, the leftists who are idealistically believing in the beauty of Soviet socialist or communist or whatever system, when they get disillusioned, they become the worst enemies. That's why my KGB instructors specifically made the point, never bother with leftists. Forget about these political prostitutes. Aim higher. This was my instruction. Try to get into large circulation, established conservative media. Reach, filthy rich movie makers, intellectuals, so-called academic circles. Cynical, egocentric people who can look into your eyes with angelic expression and tell you a lie. These are the most recruitable people, people who lack moral principles, who are either too greedy or too suffer from self-importance. They feel that they matter a lot. These are the people who KGB wanted very much to recruit.
But to eliminate the others, to execute the others, don't they serve some purpose? Wouldn't they be the ones they rely on?
They serve purpose only at the stage of destabilization of a nation. For example, your leftists in the United States, all these professors and all these beautiful civil rights defenders, they are instrumental in the process of the subversion only to destabilize the nation. When their job is completed, they are not needed anymore. They know too much. Some of them, when they get disillusioned, when they see that Marxist-Lenin has come to power, obviously they get offended. They think that they will come to power. That will never happen, of course. They will be lined up against the wall and shot. But they may turn into the most bitter enemies of Marxist-Leninists when they come to power. And that's what happened in Nicaragua. You remember most of these former Marxist-Leninists were either put to prison or one of them split, and now he's working against Sandinistas. It happened in Grenada when Maurice Bishop was already a Marxist. He was executed by a new Marxist who was more Marxist than this Marxist. Same happened in Afghanistan when first there was Taraki, he was killed by Amin, then Amin was killed by Babrak Karmal with the help of KGB. Same happened in Bangladesh when Mujibur Rahman, very pro-Soviet leftist, was assassinated by his own Marxist-Leninist military comrades. It's the same pattern everywhere. The moment they serve their purpose, all the useful idiots either be executed entirely, all the idealistically minded Marxists, or exiled or put in prisons, like in Cuba. Many, many former Marxists are in Cuba, in prison. So most of the Indians who were cooperating with the Soviets, especially with our Department of Information of the USSR embassy, were listed for execution. And when I discovered that fact, of course I was sick. I was mentally and physically sick. I thought that I'm going to explode one day during the briefing at the ambassador's office. I would stand up and say something that we are basically a bunch of murderers. That's what we are. It has nothing to do with friendship and understanding between the nation and blah, blah, blah. We are murderers. We behave as a bunch of thugs in a country which is hospitable to us, a country which with ancient traditions. But I did not defect. I tried to get the message across. To my horror, nobody wanted even to listen, least of all to believe what I had to say. And I tried all kinds of tricks. I would leak information through letters or lost documents or something like that. And still I got no message. The message was not published even in the conservative mass media of India. The immediate impulse to defect was Bangladesh crisis, which was described by American correspondents as Islamic grassroots revolution, which is absolute baloney. There was nothing to do with Islam and there was no grassroots revolution. Actually, there are no grassroots revolutions, period. Any revolution is a byproduct of a highly organized group of conscientious and professional organizers, but has nothing to do with grassroots. In Bangladesh, it was nothing with grassroots. Most of the Awami League party members, Awami League means People's Party, were trained in Moscow in the high party school. Most of the Mukti Fauj leaders, Mukti Fauj in Bengali means People's Army, same as SWAPO and all kind of liberation armies all over the world, the same bunch of useful idiots. They were trained at Lumumba University and various centers of the KGB in Simferopol, in Crimea, and in Tashkent. So when I saw that Indian territory is being used as a jumping board to destroy East Pakistan, I saw myself, thousands of so-called students, traveling through India to East Pakistan, through the territory of India, and Indian government pretended not to see what's going on. They knew perfectly well, the Indian police knew it, the intelligence department of Indian government knew it, the KGB of course knew it, and the CIA knew it. That was most infuriating, because when I defected and I explained to the CIA debriefers, they should watch out because East Pakistan is going to erupt any moment. They said I was reading too many James Bond novels. Anyway, so East Pakistan was doomed. One of my colleagues in the Soviet consulate in Calcutta, when he was dead drunk, he ventured into the basement to relieve himself. And he found the big boxes which said printed matter to Dhaka University. Dhaka is the capital of East Pakistan. And since he was drunk and curious, he opened one of the boxes and he discovered not printed matter. He discovered Kalashnikov guns and ammunition in there. Anyway, it's a long story. When I saw the preparations for the invasion into East Pakistan, obviously I wanted to defect immediately. The only thing I couldn't at that time make up my mind when and where and how. One of the reasons, of course, you see, I was in love with India. I mentioned it before. I spoke the languages. I socialized with people. And I understood that I had to act fast unless I want this beautiful country to be permanently and irreparably damaged by our presence. One of the reasons not to defect was, as you can see, I was living in relative affluence. Who the hell in the normal mind would defect and do what? To be abused by your media? To be called McCarthyist and fascist and paranoid? Or to drive a taxi in New York City? What for? What the hell for should I defect? To be abused by Americans? To be insulted in exchange for my effort to bring the truthful information about impending danger of subversion? As you can see, I was living in quite a comfortable conditions next to swimming pool, where Indians were not allowed, by the way. I was highly paid expert in propaganda. I had my family. I was respected by my nation. My career was cloudless. The third reason, how to defect with the family. To defect with the baby and the wife would be virtual suicide, because according to law, that hypocritical law which I quoted before, the Indian police will have to hand me over back to the KGB, and that will be the end of my defection and probably my life. Again, I cannot smuggle my wife because she was not quite sure what I was doing. She was not that idealistically involved, and she was definitely not in the total picture of what I was doing for the KGB. She would be shocked if I you know, put her in my van and drive her to the American embassy or elsewhere. That would be a greatest danger. So again, I had to defect in such a way that my defection would look as simple disappearance. And there were many cases like that when the Soviet agents simply disappeared, either killed in action or, thanks to their curiosity and their close contacts with radicals, some of them were killed by the Marxists, by the way. It happened in many African countries when the Soviet KGB were killed by Africans themselves. Not because they hated Marxism-Leninism, but because they were simply trigger-happy bunch of unruly characters. If you give them machine gun, they will shoot. And some of the Soviets obviously were not careful enough to protect themselves, and they got into embarrassing situations when they were shot at the crossfire between factions of so-called liberation movements. Anyway, so I decided, as I said, to study the counterculture. I decided this probably would be the best way to disappear. I socialized with characters like this. On the left, you see, he's a barefoot American hippie. It took me quite a long time to study exactly what they were doing and how to mix with them. But eventually I did it. Most of Indian newspapers carried my picture and promise of 2,000 rupees for information about my whereabouts. But they were looking for the wrong person, because they obviously tried to stop a young Soviet diplomat in white shirt and tie, and this is how I looked at the time of defection. Nobody could possibly think that a Soviet diplomat would be as crazy as to join a bunch of hippies.
That's you.
Travel India and smoke hash. So I made it literally almost like a Hollywood-style detective story. From under the nose of the KGB in Bombay airport, I landed the plane and I flew to Greece, where I was debriefed by the CIA. That's basically that's all for my slides.
We can turn off the projector, and that's very interesting. Well, you spoke several times before about ideological subversion. That is a phrase that I'm afraid some Americans don't fully understand. When the Soviets use the phrase ideological subversion, what do they mean by it?
Ideological subversion is the process which is legitimate, overt, and open. You can see it with your own eyes. All you have to do, all American mass media has to do, is to unplug their bananas from their ears, open up their eyes, and they can see it. There is no mystery. There is nothing to do with espionage. I know that espionage intelligence gathering looks more romantic. It sells more deodorants through the advertising, probably. That's why your Hollywood producers are so crazy about James Bond type of thrillers. But in reality, the main emphasis of the KGB is not in the area of intelligence at all. According to my opinion and opinion of many defectors of my caliber, only about 15% of time, money, and manpower is spent on espionage as such. The other 85% is a slow process which we call either ideological subversion or active measures, активные мероприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite of the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interests of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. It's a great brainwashing process which goes very slow, and it's divided in four basic stages. The first one being demoralization. It takes from 15 to 20 years to demoralize a nation. Why that many years? Because this is the minimum number of years which requires to educate one generation of students in the country of your enemy, exposed to the ideology of the enemy. In other words, Marxism-Leninism ideology is being pumped into the soft heads of at least three generations of American students without being challenged or counterbalanced by the basic values of Americanism, American patriotism. The result you can see, most of the people who graduated in the 60s, dropouts or half-baked intellectuals, are now occupying the positions of power in the government, civil service, business, mass media, educational system. You are stuck with them. You cannot get rid of them. They are contaminated. They are programmed to think and react to certain stimuli in a certain pattern. You cannot change their mind, even if you expose them to authentic information, even if you prove that white is white and black is black, you still cannot change the basic perception and the logic of behavior. In other words, these people, the process of demoralization is complete and irreversible. To get rid society of these people, you need another 20 or 15 years to educate a new generation of patriotically minded and common sense people who would be acting in favor and in the interests of the United States society.
And yet these people who've been programmed and, as you say, in place, and yes, who are favorable to an opening with the Soviet concept, mm-hmm, these are the very people who would be marked for extermination in this country?
Most of them, yes. Mm-hmm. Simply because the psychological shock when they will see in future what the beautiful society of equality and social justice means in practice, obviously they will revolt. They will be very unhappy, frustrated people. And the Marxist-Leninist regime does not tolerate these people. They will join the links of dissenters, mm-hmm, dissidents. Unlike in present United States, there will be no place for dissent in future Marxist-Leninist America. Here you can get popular like Daniel Ellsberg and filthy rich like Jane Fonda for being dissident, for criticizing your Pentagon. In future, these people will be simply squashed like cockroaches. Nobody is going to pay them nothing for their beautiful, noble ideas of equality. This they don't understand, and it will be the greatest shock for them, of course. The demoralization process in the United States is basically completed already. For the last 25 years, actually it's overfulfilled, because demoralization now reaches such areas where previously not even Comrade Andropov and all his experts would even dream of such a tremendous success. Most of it is done by Americans to Americans, thanks to lack of moral standards. As I mentioned before, exposure to true information does not matter anymore. A person who was demoralized is unable to assess true information. The facts tell nothing to him. Even if I shower him with information, with authentic proof, with documents, with pictures, Even if I take him by force to the Soviet Union and show him concentration camp, he will refuse to believe it until he is going to receive a kick in the in his fat bottom. When a military boot crashes his, then he will understand, but not before that. That's the tragic of the situation of demoralization. So basically, America is stuck with demoralization. And unless, even if you start right now, here, this minute, you start educating new generation of Americans, it will still take you 15 to 20 years to turn the tide of ideological perception of reality back to normalcy and patriotism. The next stage is destabilization. This time, subverter does not care about your ideas and the patterns of your consumption. Whether you eat junk food and get fat and flabby, it doesn't matter anymore. This time, and it takes only from 2 to 5 years to destabilize a nation, it's what matters is essentials: economy, foreign relations, defense systems. And you can see it quite clearly that in some areas, in such sensitive areas as defense and economy, the influence of Marxist-Leninist ideas in the United States is absolutely fantastic. I could never believe it 14 years ago when I landed in this part of the world that the process will go that fast. The next stage, of course, is crisis. It may take only up to 6 weeks to bring a country to the verge of crisis. You can see it in Central America now. And after crisis, with a violent change of power, structure, and economy, you have so-called the period of normalization. It may last indefinitely. Normalization is a cynical expression borrowed from Soviet propaganda. When the Soviet tanks moved into Czechoslovakia in 68, Comrade Brezhnev said, "Now the situation in brotherly Czechoslovakia is normalized." This is what will happen in the United States if you allow all these schmucks to bring the country to crisis, to promise people all kind of goodies and the paradise on earth, to destabilize your economy, to eliminate the principle of free market competition, and to put a big brother government in Washington, D.C., with benevolent dictators like Walter Mondale, who will promise lots of things, never mind whether the promises are fulfillable or not. He will go to Moscow to kiss the bottoms of new generation of Soviet assassins. Never mind. He will create false illusions that the situation is under control. Situation is not under control. Situation is disgustingly out of control. Most of the American politicians, media, and educational system trains another generation of people who think they are living at a peacetime. False. United States is in the state of war. Undeclared total war against the basic principles and the foundations of this system. And the initiator of this war is not Comrade Andropov, of course. It's the system, however ridiculous it may sound, the world communist system or the world communist conspiracy. Whether I scare some people or not, I don't give a hoot. If you are not scared by now, nothing can scare you. But you don't have to be paranoid about it. What actually happens now, that unlike myself, you have literally several years to live on unless the United States wake up. The time bomb is ticking. With every second, the disaster is coming closer and closer. Unlike myself, you will have nowhere to defect to, unless you want to live in Antarctica with penguins. This is it. This is the last country of freedom and possibility.
Okay, so what do we do? What is your recommendation to the American people?
Well, the immediate thing that comes to my mind is, of course, there must be a very strong national effort to educate people in the spirit of real patriotism, number one. Number two, to explain them the real danger of socialist, communist, whatever, welfare state, big brother government. If people will fail to grasp the impending danger of that development, nothing ever can help United States. You may kiss goodbye to your freedom, including freedoms to homosexuals, to prison inmate. All these freedoms will vanish, evaporate in 5 seconds, including your precious lives. The second thing, the moment at least part of United States population is convinced that the danger is real, they have to force their government. And I'm not talking about sending letters, signing petitions, and all this beautiful, noble activity. I'm talking about forcing United States government to stop aiding communism. Because there is no other problem more burning and urgent than to stop the Soviet military-industrial complex from destroying what is whatever is left of the free world. And it is very easy to do. No credits, no technology, no money, no political or diplomatic recognition, and of course no such idiocy as grain deals to USSR. The Soviet people, 270 million of Soviets, will be eternally thankful to you if you stop aiding a bunch of murderers who sit now in Kremlin and whom President Reagan respectfully calls government. They do not govern anything, least of all such complexity as the Soviet economy. So basic, two very simple, maybe two simplistic answers or solutions, but nevertheless, they are the only solutions. Educate yourself. Understand what's going on around you. You are not living at the time of peace. You are in a state of war. And you have precious little time to save yourself. You don't have much time, especially if you are talking about young generation. There's not much time left for convulsions to the beautiful disco music. Very soon it will go, just overnight. If we are talking about capitalists or wealthy businessmen, I think they are selling the rope on which they will hang very soon. If they don't stop, if they cannot curb their unsettled desire for profit, and if they keep on trading with the monster of the Soviet communism, they are going to hang very soon. And they will pray to be killed, but unfortunately they will be sent to Alaska probably to manage industry of slaves. It's simplistic. I know it sounds unpleasant. I know Americans don't like to listen to things which are unpleasant. But I have defected not to tell you the stories about such idiocy as microfilm James Bond type espionage. This is garbage. You don't need any espionage anymore. I have come to talk about survival. It's a question of survival of this system. You may ask me, what is it in for me? Survival, obviously, because I am now in your boat. If we sing together, we'll sing beautifully together. There is no other place on this planet to defect to.
Welcome to the Alpha Male Buddhist from Brooklyn podcast. I'm your host, Miguel. I like to cover topics from ancient history, great leaders and generals from the past, and I also like to talk about self-realization, truth, critical thinking, and strategic spirituality. Outside the box, nonconformist. I'm here to shatter the myths of the mainstream media and the beta sheeple narrative. My email address is alphamalebuddhist@gmail.com. My website is alphamalebuddhist.podbean.com. My Instagram is alphamalebuddhist. And check out my YouTube channel, Alpha Male Buddhist, and that's on YouTube. It is the podcast accompanied with video clips that integrate exactly with the podcast, so it's motivational and inspirational. I also have promotional t-shirts. If you go to my website, alphamalebuddhist.podbean.com, you can see the promotional t-shirts there. Reach out to me. Also, if you have any show notes or any suggestions that you would like to hear on the podcast, just reach out and see if I can get that done. I've been getting some really great emails and feedback from my listeners, which is great. So I want to thank you for listening, and namaste.